Let's go back to New York. He's a senior writer for MLB.com, Barry Bloom. Nice to have you, Barry. How are you?
Great, great. It's a beautiful Sunday here. Actually, finally warm. It's been cold here all week. It's just ridiculous.
Now, where are you? Yesterday, we talked, you were in Cooperstown.
Right, just on the outskirts of Cooperstown now, driving back to Syracuse for a flight to San Diego later today.
And what brought you to Cooperstown yesterday?
They have a game called the Hall of Fame Classic, which replaces the old game where two teams used to come in after the Hall of Fame induction. Two major league teams would come in and play each other. And now what they have is each team in baseball gives a player who has retired to come in here and be part of two teams. You know, there were like six Hall of Famers here and a whole cornucopia of fun guys to see who I called, you know, if this was the Hall of the Very Good, these guys would be in it.
Very. Who was there from the Giants?
It's a good question.
All right.
You know, I looked around you know, there was nobody really recognizable there from the Giants.
All right. Well, was it well received? What kind of a crowd comes out to this game? Is it a big deal?
Yeah, it's a big deal. It was pretty packed. You know, it's a seven-inning, two-hour game, you know, whichever comes first. And, you know, a couple of home runs, you know, some decent pitching. Steve Avery looks like he could still play. A lot of these guys look like they could still play.
Yeah, very good. Barry Bloom with us, leaving Cooperstown, New York. Boy, we had Jeff Katz on yesterday. He was the mayor of Cooperstown. He's written a book, Split Season 1981. But they've got quite a weekend coming up, an induction weekend. Boy, that place just gears up for it. I asked him, I said, well, you have to double the police force, triple the police force. Describe induction weekend, and especially what's coming up this year.
It's hard to tell. I mean, last year, you know, with the three managers and Clavin and Maddox and Thomas, you know, there was 55,000, and they were talking about even more. You know, the largest was Gwynn Ripken. In 2007, there was about 75,000 to 80,000 has been estimated for that one. Mm. Normally, for a regular old run-of-the-mill, it's somewhere around 10 to 20. You know, it's the town is just what it is. There's no, you know, it doesn't expand for all these people. So what happens is the bigger the crowd, the farther out in the orbit of Cooperstown people have to stay and drive in for the events. So, you know, you get people staying out in Syracuse and, you know, Albany, and south in Oneonta. You're just driving all over the place on two-lane country roads. You know, spectacular scenery at this time of the year when you're out of the winter. And, you know, then you have the busloads of people coming in, usually from the cities where people are being inducted from. Last year, you know, Torrey's wife has a big family, and every one of them came. So they had to rent like a casino that was about 40, 50 miles away to house everybody. You know, and of course, the inductees stay in the Otisario, which is right on the lake. And I don't know, Bart, Marty, if you've ever been to one of the inductions, but it should be something, if you haven't, that's on your bucket list, because as a baseball aficionado like you, it's really something that's unmissable. It's really my favorite weekend in all of sports.
Yeah, I've been there twice. Leonard Coppett was alive. I went there as his guest, so I got access to the Otisago Hotel, and it was just unbelievable being there. But I remember driving there from Albany, and, you know, it's not like you're driving on a freeway. You're driving on country roads without any signs. And believe me, if you're driving around there at night, it looks like Ichabod Crane is going to be coming out at some point. It's very, you know, so I stayed within Cooperstown. Remember Tony Blangino? He did the scouting book and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he arranged for me to have housing within Cooperstown. It was sort of a bed and breakfast. I had a great time. I've been there twice, And I said it for me, it was like baseball heaven, just walking around and seeing everybody. It really is amazing. I'm glad you get to do these things and be there. All right, Barry Bloom is with us. Now, New York, they had major league meetings this week, and we've had discussions about it. People have written about it all week. Can they actually reduce this schedule from 162 to 154? Will it happen? Why would it happen? And what are the pitfalls getting in the way of it happening?
Well, I would always think that the major pitfall is, if, especially to get the players on board, is that you're going to play less games, but it's not going to affect the salary structure. Because if they think that, the season shrinks by X amount of percent, and that's going to mean a percentage shrink in salaries accordingly, it's never going to happen. So I think that's number one, where you go. And then basically, then you look at the schedule and see, where you can contract in. And I think, part of this is like, for the players' point of view, they want to have more time off in the expanded, part of the season. Like, just map out the season the way it is and throw eight more open dates in there rather than camps. But I think from baseball's point of view, they're going to want to contract it a little bit so you can move the postseason and the playoffs up a little bit, so you don't go into November with the World Series. So I think there are all kinds of considerations here on how to do this. They've been talking about it for years. They talked about interleague play for years. They talked about the designated hitter for years. And I just think it's one of those things. They're not going to open the collective bargaining agreement for it. But, in 2016, the current one ends. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think, the DH will probably be a big thing on that one. And I think, this will be discussed. And there's probably a few other things that they'll tinker with, depending on how, these play of game clocks and options work along the way, too.
Do you see the schedule actually being contracted from 162 to 154? Do you think they would actually a positive part of what would be discussed here, or is it just something that we talk about?
I think it's something that we talk about, we also talk about, moving one team from one league to another, that it would never happen, and then you have Milwaukee going from the American League to the National League, Houston going from the National League to the American League. I think down the road they'd like a wholesale geographical change that would break up, the tradition of the two leagues too, if you could ever get all the owners together to agree with it. But I think first things first is that you have to unify the rules, designated hitter or no. And I think, because of everything we've spoken about, the train has left the station on no DH because it's worldwide used, and it's used in high school and college. And whether you like the rule, don't like the rule, it's probably the way that you're going to wind up having to unify. And once you do that, then there's a whole other set of things that they could do.
Yeah, boy, amazing. Boy, all right, I see all this on the horizon. At least it's going to be debated a lot. That's why I'm glad we could have Barry Bloom on to frame those issues for us. You also were you at the major league meetings this week?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, I know that Larry Barron was out there. I know they had him on Wednesday. But it was Rob Manfred's first time really to take charge during the season, and I was curious what your reaction would be. All right, let's move forward. You wrote an interesting column about Adrian Beltre, about third baseman in the Hall of Fame. I found it very, very informative. Beltre is one of those names that, is he good enough? Is he not good enough? Do we need more information? But I was very interested to get your reaction to Adrian Beltre and the article you wrote, talking really about the quality and the list of third basemen in the Hall of Fame.
Right. It's pretty limited. And I don't know if you saw the piece I did yesterday, because I did kind of the same sort of analysis of catcher.
No, I didn't see it. No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, with Pudge Rodriguez, Trammell being last year on the ballot, the chances, Pudge Rodriguez 2 years away. And there's only 11 catchers in the Hall of Fame, and only three have been inducted since Yogi Berra in 1972.
Wow.
And there's just some positions that you know, there isn't a whole, you know, there's a paucity of players who reach the level of what people believe they should be at those positions to be in the Hall of Fame. And everything, you know, is kind of a different criteria. I mean, even if you look at shortstop, I mean, Trammell's numbers offensively are on par or better than Larkin and Ozzie Smith, the last two guys that got in. You know, Ripken is probably a little bit separated because his consecutive game playing streak, and he had well over 3,000 hits. But, I mean, how did people decide this, I'm not sure. But I think in the case of Beltre, you know, off the top of my head, when people ask me about it, I've had some discussions. Off the top of my head, it doesn't seem to me, I think Beltre is, again, one of those players who would be in the Hall of the Very Good, but not the Hall of Fame. But when then I decided, somebody asked me online what you think about it, and rather than just, like, pop off, I figured I'd just do some sort of analysis and compare them against everybody that's in the Hall. And, you know, you look at the next two guys that are coming up as third basemen who played predominantly at their careers at third base. You know, Chipper Jones and Beltre are really the next two. And Alex Rodriguez is certainly going to be in there, you know, but he's in a different class because of the whole PED issue. So, you know, Jones is really coming up in 2018. You know, Beltre's still playing, and he, who knows when he's not. So that's pretty well down the line. So there's a lot of things that he can still do in his career. But his base is there already. If he gets close to 3,000 hits, which he's not that far away, plus he's going to get closer to 500 home runs, there are only two third basemen in the Hall with 500 home runs. You know, Matthews and Schmidt. So I think already you look at it way down the line, and you're talking about it could be 7, 8, as much as a decade with Beltre, you know, he could fit in very well. And then, but Chipper's numbers, that's another one I've been looking at. Is he a first ballot guy or not? And the more I look at his numbers and what he did as a switch hitter, you know, he holds up pretty well with everybody too. And I think he's probably a first ballot guy. And I was talking to Glavin about it a little bit yesterday for an article further down towards the induction. And you're going to wind up, including Cox, with five guys off of that team in the Hall of Fame once Chipper gets in. And I look at the Yankees and I say, you know, if the Yankees to won 4 out of 5 in that same era, they're going to have Torrey, Moe, and Jeter definitely, but they're probably not going to have five players unless, you know, people vote in Posada and Pettit, and I think they're on the bubble.
Very true. Very true. The Braves get all the Hall of Famers. The Yankees get all the world championships. Hey, a number of people have tweeted in, and we'll credit them in our next segment. Russ Ortiz was the Giants representative yesterday.
Ah, gotcha.
All right. I take it you didn't talk to Russ.
No, I did not talk to Russ. And now that it rings a bell, I do remember something.
All right, very good. All right, Barry Bloom is with us. Barry, some of your take on the NL West. I know you're based down in San Diego and Arizona, and I know you follow the Giants and the Dodgers, the Padres, the Diamondbacks still hanging in there, and the Rockies, boy, sinking fast. What's your take on the West this week?
Well, I mean, now that we're over a quarter of the way through the season, you start seeing some patterns. The Diamondbacks certainly have hung in there and have played much better than I thought, and the Padres have really played well below expectations. And the thing with me with the Padres is that the big red flag for me right now is that they're just not beating good teams. They lost, you know, 6 out of 8 to the Dodgers already this year. The Nationals came in and took 3 out of 4 from them last weekend. You know, if the Cubs went 2 out of 3, who are a team that really should be on par, but they're a good team. You know, they're beating the Diamondbacks. They're beating, you know, the lower-level teams, the Rockies. But they're just, aside for the Giants, that first weekend of the season down there when the Giants pitching staff was well up in the air, they went 3 out of 4. Then they went to San Francisco, and the Giants took care of them there, too. So I think that's a real issue they have not gotten any traction. Their pitching, when it's good, the hitting is gone. When the hitting is good, the pitching's been gone. The bullpen hasn't been very good. You know, the Dodgers, to me, I had a long talk with Ron Say about this yesterday off the record pretty much. And, you know, he doesn't see any urgency there with the Dodgers. The Giants have taken good care of the Dodgers already this season. The fact that they're now formally going without Ryu and McCarthy for the rest of the season with no replacements in their starting rotation. You know, Jack Jansen being back in their bullpen helps. But, you know, Puig's been out for a while. I think they're easily beatable. And as we always say about the Giants, you know, they're the world champions, and until somebody knocks them off and eliminates them, whether it's during the regular season or the playoffs, they're still the team to beat. And they're good, and they find a way of doing it. And, you know, this is with Kane out, PV out, and, you know, they're getting more out of Lindstrom than Hudson and Vogelsong, I think, than anybody thought. And this kid Heston came up and has done a really good job. And the bullpen is their bullpen. It's a really well-run bullpen. If they find a way to win, there's a thing about them, there's a confidence in them, that if they're going through, you know, 3 championships in 5 years, now a lot of the core of the team being around for the last 2, you know, with the staff and everything, they really feel like, I really think there's a swagger about them that no matter what game they're in, no matter what time of the season they're in, if they're intact and they have all their parts, they're in pretty good shape to get it together and make a good run of it, and they're doing it again. So, you know, I still think the Padres are going to get it together. There's a big hue and cry now among the fans down in San Diego about Bud Black and his tenure. I think that I've written about this a lot, once during the winter and recently. I think they made a huge mistake by not re-upping him a year, because what happened 2 years ago with Mattingly in L.A., the Dodgers declined to exercise an option for him and left him hung out to dry for the whole season. Every time they hit the skids, there were stories that Mattingly was gone. And now the same thing's happening with Bud. So, I mean, to me, what the Diamondbacks did last year, for whatever reason they did, they signed Gibson to an extension. The team went in the tank. But all season, there really was not much discussion about whether Gibson was going to be fired or not, even when Marissa came in to reevaluate both Towers and Gibson. It was left, okay, he's reevaluating, and we'll know by the end of the year. So no matter how bad they played, you know, they still was not this constant trumpy, and they wound up getting rid of him anyway and paying him off. And, you know, so that's the part of, you know, the equation and doing business that you have to do. And the Padres should have just done that. And if they had a bad season, decided they want to make a change, make the change at the end of the season and pay Bud off. Instead, they've left him dangling. And he's a very well-liked manager, very well-liked around the league. The players really, really adore him. To me, if they let him go, everything that they did to move forward at this point, they're going to have a huge setback and a real mutiny in their clubhouse among these guys, because it's a group of players that come from everywhere. You know, he's got Kemp and Upton and Middlebrooks and all these guys, and they're all, you know, they're all content. And he treats them like men, and there's no issue in the clubhouse. But if they get rid of them, who do they go to in the middle of the season if they make an abrupt change like it's happened in a couple of places, like happened in Miami? And look where they've done. They've done nothing since that change.
Yeah. So, well, that's the talk of baseball. And Greg Council wanted to get Pat Murphy on his staff. The Padres wouldn't let him. And now the speculation that Murphy may succeed Black. But that's the story for another week. Have a safe trip back. Where are you heading from Syracuse? Where do you fly back to?
I'm going to San Diego. And I'm doing San Diego Angels next few days and Pirates. Padres next weekend, and then the Mets come in, and then I'm heading back east again for a couple of weeks.
All right. Barry Bloom, senior writer, MLB.com, and always a provocative discussion. I appreciate having you on this Sunday morning. Thanks, Barry.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Barry Bloom.